From KGW News, this is Straight Talk with Laurel Porter.
Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. I'm Laurel Porter. One of the most consequential and closely watched races coming up in the Oregon primary election is the Democratic race in Oregon's 3rd congressional district. That's the seat held by Congressman Earl Blumenauer since 1996, but it's now an open seat after Blumenauer announced he'd retire at the end of this term. Since the 3rd district is the most Democratic district in Oregon and one of the most Democratic in the country, it's highly likely whoever wins the primary on May 21st will go on in November to become the 3rd district's next representative in Congress. So this is a critical race. In this episode of Straight Talk, a conversation with the 3 leading candidates. Before we meet them, here's a look at the map of the 3rd district. It includes most of Multnomah County, parts of Clackamas County, and Hood River County. That's about 700,000 people. The candidates joining me today are Sushila Jayapal, a former Multnomah County commissioner. She grew up in India. Jayapal says her parents used all their savings to send her to the United States at the age of 16 to attend Swarthmore College, because they believed in the American dream. Jayapal eventually became a lawyer for Adidas. If elected, she would be the first immigrant and woman of color to represent the district. Dr. Maxine Dexter represents Portland, Oregon's 33rd district in the state legislature. She's also a pulmonary and critical care doctor. She is the only person in her family to have graduated college, something she said wouldn't have been possible without the wages she earned from a union job at Albertsons. And our 3rd candidate is Eddie Morales, a Gresham City Councilor, who has spent the last several years helping others in East County get elected through the political advocacy organization he founded, East County Rising. Morales is the son of a Mexican immigrant mother who crossed the border hidden in the trunk of a car because she wanted better opportunities for her children. If elected, he would be the first Latino to represent the district and first LGBTQ congressperson to represent Oregon. Welcome to my guests, 3rd District Congressional Candidates Eddie Morales, Sushila Jayapal, and Dr. Maxine Dexter. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for having us, Laurel.
Thank you for having us.
I want to let our viewers know that I'm not running a stopwatch. This isn't really a formal debate, but I'm asking our candidates to keep their answers to about a minute or so, or I'll jump in just to keep us moving along. But you all are so impressive. You've served in elected office. You have impressive resumes. You share very similar values. So tell us what distinguishes you from the other candidates and why you think you're the best person to follow in Congressman Blumenauer's footsteps. You've served so well the people of the 3rd District. And we'll begin with Eddie.
Thank you, Laura, and thanks for having us. And thanks for the question. And thanks to everyone for tuning in to learn more about, you know, what differentiates all of us. I want to get to your question in a minute, but I think there's something really pressing that's happening right now. Our Democratic primary is being bought for one candidate.
Now, I want to tell you that I'm going to ask a question about campaign finance reform later. Yeah. So why don't we stick to the question I asked you, and then we'll come to that later, okay?
Sorry. That's just top of mind for me, and I think should be top of mind for a lot of the voters here. You know, like Earl Blumenauer, I got started organizing 25 years ago, pretty young age, on college campus. And a lot of my organizing started because of my story. You know, I've lost 2 brothers to gun violence, a sister to opioid addiction. My mother came to this country in the trunk of a car, my 8 siblings in the backseat of strangers' cars. And those things to me are public policy failures. And for 25 years, I've worked on passing the Affordable Care Act, on DACA and the DREAM Act, here as a Gresham City Councilor, building more multi-generational affordable housing, as well as helping to reduce gun violence by 30% in my city. And so I want to continue that work to represent the East Side, but also just represent this district in Congress and to get things done.
Thank you, Eddie. Sushila.
Yeah, thank you, Laurel. Good to be here again. You know, I think I'm the best candidate because I am the strongest progressive in this race. And what I mean by that is I am clear about my values. I state them. I am clear about the policy goals that I have, and I believe that we should have bold, ambitious policy goals. I'm upfront and outfront about those goals on a range of issues. That includes, for example, climate change, where I have been endorsed by every environmental organization that's endorsed in this race. It includes abortion, where I have been outfront by serving on the Planned Parenthood Board and talking about about my own abortion story, which I think is an important piece of advocating for this as an essential freedom. On healthcare, where I have been unabashed about my support for Medicare for All, single-payer healthcare. And finally, on the issue of Gaza, where I was the first candidate to call for a ceasefire and have been steadfast in my position that we should not be funding the military offensive aid to Israel in this war. Now, my opponents have come along on a couple of those issues as this campaign has progressed, but that's what it means to be a progressive, and I have the coalition and can build the coalition to get those values advanced in Congress.
Thank you, Sushila. Maxine.
Thank you so much for having us. Earl Blumenauer has big shoes to fill, and I am absolutely the best position to do that. As a mother, as a physician who has taken care of patients in CD3 for over 15 years, and as a state lawmaker who has a record of established progressive policies that I have proven that I can work across the aisle and get hard things passed. As a physician, I see every day the policy failures that we have as a society. And I can pivot to the state house where I've made significant change on things like opioid harm reduction, gun violence prevention, housing and homelessness. We invested over $2 billion over the last 2 years in combined efforts to help make our communities safer and end the housing humanitarian crisis we have here on our streets. And I'm very proud of that. And I'm glad to have gotten the endorsements of the Oregonian, the Willamette Week, and many other progressive organizations.
Thank you, Maxine. I want to dig a little more into what's happening in Gaza and with Israel. And I do want to let our viewers know we're taping this on Thursday, so world events, national events, local events could change by the time this airs. A protest movement against the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza has grown at college campuses across the country, including locally at PSU and the University of Oregon. We saw police on Thursday arrest a number of protesters who've been camping in the library. Pro-Israel Democrats are pushing President Biden to respond more forcefully against anti-Semitic incidents at colleges and an evolving situation on campuses where students feel unsafe. While other Democrats praise the bravery of students standing up for the rights of the Palestinian people and for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. What do you think President Biden's response should be to the campus protests? And do you support placing conditions on future military aid to Israel? And Sushila, I know you started talking about this. Expand on that for us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first of all, I think we need to listen to what we're hearing from our students. Young people, students have often been on the vanguard of really difficult issues. And what we're seeing around the country, including right here in Portland, is students who are outraged by what's happening in Gaza and by the fact that our administration is funding what's happening in Gaza. Freedom of expression is always messy. Protest is always messy. Anti-Semitism is unacceptable. Islamophobia is unacceptable. Violence is unacceptable. But they are exercising their rights of free speech. And while I know that university presidents have very difficult jobs, they should avoid at all costs, or except as a last resort, sending
in the police. What should Biden be doing?
Yeah. Well, I think I have been clear about this. I think Biden needs to exercise the leverage that the United States has to put an end to the violence that's happening in Gaza. And what that means is we need to stop providing unconditional military aid to Israel.
Thank you so much. This is absolutely an evolving issue across the country on the college campuses. I want to address that first. I spoke to my daughter, who's at the University of Virginia this morning, about what's happening. We have a crisis where our First Amendment rights as individuals have to be protected, and absolutely to the utmost on the college campuses across our country, where we need to have that critical conversation and dialogue. And I think that we have seen some places where they do it really well. The University of Chicago has been very clear about where lines are, and we all are seeing a varied response. So I think that protecting students' ability to have safe places to have critical conversations is foundational. But when it disrupts the ability of others to feel safe in their own First Amendment rights or to access their education, I think there's some challenges there, and we're seeing that. I think President Biden should lean in on the fact that we need to protect First Amendment rights and make sure that people can feel safe on their university campuses. This is finals time. Like, my daughter's trying to get her finals in, and seeing that the University of Virginia has done a really great job. So,
thank you, Maxine. I have to stop you there. And Eddie.
Yeah, you know, I believe that students have the right to learn in a safe space. I actually got my starts doing protesting when a group of farm worker women on the University of Oregon campus were providing our food, weren't getting paid fair wages, and they had bad working conditions, and we won. I also protested after September 11th, a lot of the anti-Muslim rhetoric. I protested on behalf of our Muslim community to feel safe on campus. I also protested for more diversity on our campus at the University of Oregon. This has been an act of free speech. I also feel that hate speech should be punished. And I am a little bit concerned about the police force that's being used in the response to these protests. In terms of what I think Biden should be doing, you know, I've said this over and over. I think we want this war to end. I think we want to get aid to the people in Gaza. I think we want to end civilian deaths, innocent civilian deaths. I think we want to start making sure that we're working towards a two-state solution where people can live in peace and raise their families.
Okay, thank you, Eddie. One of the biggest issues of our time here at home and nationwide revolves around mental health and addiction. Some of the problem can be traced to the disinvestment by the federal government in the mental health and public health systems, and it's been exacerbated by the pandemic, especially impacting our young people. What new ideas do you want to bring to Congress to help shape policy that addresses our mental health and addiction crises? We'll begin with Maxine this time.
Thank you so much. This is such an important issue, and it's one that I've leaned heavily into at the state level. School-based health centers is a foundational place to start. We also need to make sure that we normalize talking about mental health and addiction issues, and that it's stigmatized right now to a point that people feel inhibited. So the investments at the federal level should be making sure that all students across the country have access to school-based health center healthcare, and that includes mental health and addiction services. We need to double down on facilities that offer safe places for youth across the spectrum to our elderly. Some of our elderly are the most at risk right now because of the changes in opioid prescriptions and what they're facing. So we need more treatment than we have fentanyl on the streets. And until that's true, we are going to continue to have unnecessary tragic deaths across our communities, as we're seeing right now.
Thank you, Maxine. Eddie.
Yeah, you know, this is a personal issue for me. I've had brothers who have suffered with addiction, and I've been able to get them into sobering centers where, you know, they were able to work on being clean for a month. And those two brothers are still with us today. Mm-hmm. And we continue to get them the counseling that they need. But I also lost a sister to opioid addiction here, just 10 minutes away from my house. Thank you. You know, my sister worked on an assembly line. She blew out her shoulder. She was prescribed opioids. But really, if we had comprehensive care and she was asked what else was going on in her life, people would have known that she was going through domestic violence and in the middle of a divorce. And so the only thing broken about my sister was not her shoulder, but really her spirit. And giving something so addictive to someone like that really took her life. And so I would love to see more sobering centers. I would love to see more wraparound services around this particular issue and have that be included as part of our healthcare system. Right now, it's disjointed. There's too many gaps in the system. And even those of us who want to help our loved ones who are suffering with addiction can't do it.
I have to stop you there, Eddie. I'm sorry. Ms. Sushila.
Thank you for that question. Clearly, crises we're facing here in Portland and across the country. There's so many things the federal government can do. I'll mention a couple on mental health and a couple on addiction. On mental health, I think the government needs to really use the leverage of the fact that it is a payer through Medicare and Medicaid for mental health services. We obviously need more services. We also need more workforce. And I think that's a place where the federal government and Congress can incentivize more people to come into the workforce and again, use those levers of being a single payer to make sure that people have other ways to access, like telehealth, as an example. Another place that I think is really important on mental health is early intervention for children and young people. So making sure that Congress is holding states accountable to providing that early intervention mental health treatment through Medicare, Medicaid, Medicare mostly, not Medicaid, for young people. And then on drugs, the federal government can work to prevent drugs from coming into the country. That is a clear role. And can work with countries like Mexico and China to ensure that they are not allowing the creation of the chemicals that go into the drugs that we're concerned about.
Thank you, Sushila. I want to get to the topic that you started with, Eddie, campaign finance reform. And Maxine, your opponents here, Eddie and Sushila, held a joint news conference on Thursday morning. voicing their concerns about the influx of so-called super dark PAC money, super PAC dark money into this race. The 314 Action Fund's given your campaign a total of $1.6 million, more than the group has spent on any other individual candidate, more than all the candidates in this race have raised so far combined. How do you square that contribution with a tweet that you had on April 4th after the Oregon legislature, of which you're a part, passed landmark campaign finance reform? You said you would work to get big money out of politics once and for all. It's pretty big money that's going into your campaign. How do you justify that?
Yeah, thank you so much. And I appreciate that my colleagues are coming to the table on this. This is something I deeply care about. This, I just want to be totally clear, they did not give $1.6 million to my campaign. This is going in an independent expenditure into
buying ads and
yes,
things. So we're going to see a lot of ads all over.
And there
Portland.
Is a very deliberate and clear wall. It's illegal for me to be talking to them about any of that. I am absolutely committed to publicly financed campaigns. This is a problem. It is unfair. It is absolutely foundational that our democracy is based on the people having the right to vote and to get their own voices heard. This is disproportionate elevation. That being said, 314 Action endorsed me 4 years ago. They recruited me to run for this seat because we care about doctors, science, and getting people into office who believe that climate change is real, that's going to fight the climate deniers in Congress, and is going to go to bat for reproductive health.
So Sheila, why did you have this news conference today? Why did you think it was important, and what do you want to do to limit dark money?
Yeah, I thought it was important because I think the voters in this district need to know where the money is coming from. To be clear, this was $1.6 million in ads for Maxine, put in by this group, 314 Action Fund. In February, they got a $500,000 donation from a single individual. Now, there are so many layers of problematic in this. We've got an outside group putting money into our district race. We've got a single donor putting in $500,000. And I think people need to decide whether they really think that somebody cares so much about getting a doctor into the third district in Oregon that they're going to put $500,000 into it. So what we called for was transparency. And I think it's really important that leaders stand behind their values. It's not enough to profess to care about money in politics and then take advantage of a system that puts dark money into politics. So transparency.
Okay, Eddie,
Maxine,
let me ask you to show us where
it's coming from.
I know you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, so like I said earlier, Laurel, the most pressing issue right now is that there is this Democratic primary is being bought by two as of yesterday, actually. There's another one. Dark money groups. And I think Democratic voters in this district need to be aware of that. Thanks to the GOP court, Citizens United, groups don't, they won't have to report when they're spending until the day before the election, after the majority of people in this district have voted. I think it's misleading, it's cynical, and it flies in the face of transparency and what we believe for, in terms of democracy. This election should be decided by Portlanders, people in East Multnomah County, Hood River, Clackamas County. It should be decided by us, not by rich people who are connected and know how to use these
vehicles. Maxine, let me give you just a few seconds to respond since you've had two opponents kind of ganging up on you here.
No, I mean, I agree. We need to take care of campaign finance reform without question. We need to change the laws. There's nothing about what's happening right now, and I am not condoning this. Let me be clear. I'm benefiting from it, but any of us would be able to benefit it. Both my colleagues have red boxes up on their websites, which welcomes IE investment. Anybody can do that when you have those resources up there. And I absolutely think that that is problematic. We need to change that.
Let me stop you there. We need to take a break. You can say something in your final thoughts at the end of the show. When we come back, what the candidates want to bring to Congress to address the homeless and housing crisis. We're back in 2 minutes. Welcome back to Straight Talk. I'm Laurel Porter. We're talking with the top three candidates in the Democratic race in Oregon's 3rd Congressional District, all seeking to succeed Congressman Earl Blumenauer, who retires at the end of this year. Welcome to our guests, Oregon State Representative Dr. Maxine Dexter, Gresham City Councilor Eddie Morales, and former Multnomah County Commissioner Sushila Jayapal. Once again, so great to have you all here. We appreciate it. A number one concern for Portlanders continues to be homelessness and a lack of affordable housing in polls. What role do you think the federal government should play in helping address the homelessness and housing crisis, and what will you advocate for in Congress, Eddie?
Great, thank you. I grew up very housing insecure. My mother would exchange childcare for us to have a place to live. And so it's been one of the things that I've worked on, you know, as a city councilor. We've helped to build over 400 affordable housing units in our city. And I think we need more housing supply, particularly multi-generational affordable housing. That solves for child care costs, that solves for elderly care costs. And we need that to have the wraparound services to get people back on their feet and back into their jobs. And I think at the federal level, we should be making larger investments in this area. And I hope that I get to serve on a committee that gets to focus just on that.
Thank you, Eddie. Sushila.
Yeah, I think we all agree that this is a crisis for us and again around the country, and that it's been a crisis decades in the making. And I think stems from disinvestment at the federal level. So we need the federal government back in the business of building public housing. The private market is never going to provide housing that's affordable to the people at the bottom end of the income scale. So back in the business of building public housing, providing vouchers, rent assistance to anyone who needs it, and then providing the range of homeless services to shelter people who cannot afford housing.
Thank you, Sushila. Maxine.
Thank you. It's definitely a multi-pronged issue. Supply is absolutely an issue. We know that. We also know that we need rental markets to be stabilized. And we've done that here in the state, where we have made sure that tenants were protected and eviction protection was instituted. We need to make sure that continues from a federal level. We need the HUD to make sure that we have vouchers and investments. We need more housing built, but we also need to do it in a climate-focused way with density and rethinking how we think about what each family needs. It's not a three-bedroom, two-bathroom home. We need places that are safe and stable in a community that's walkable and resilient. We also need to make sure that every step of the way, community is brought in, and low-income, medically complex seniors to our farm workers all need to be brought into the table to find out what kinds of housing they want.
Thank you, candidates. We have time for each about 45 seconds for a final thought to leave with voters. We'll start with Sushila.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. This is a pivotal moment and a generational shift that we're seeing in Congress. I think it's critical that the voters of this district elect the strongest progressive voice. That means somebody who's going to advocate for bold policy and who can build the coalition here locally to take and push through that big policy. I invite people to look at my website, and what I'm most proud of is the coalition of local community leaders in District 3 representing the diverse communities in this most diverse district in Oregon, and that's the coalition that knows my leadership, knows that I can deliver, and I will take with me to Congress.
Thank you, Sushila. Eddie.
Again, thanks for having us. You know, I have the broadest coalition of support behind me. I have the most labor support. I have the realtors, credit unions. And I think that shows that I can build coalitions to get things done. I'm actually the most experienced person on this, you know, running for office in terms of legislative and policymaking experience. I want to spend the last second of mine asking Maxine, will you look at the camera and tell Action 314 Action to disclose their donors before May 20th?
Do you want me to?
Yes, sure. Answer the question.
It is absolutely. They are legally obligated to disclose
before May 20th, before the day before the election.
Eddie, you understand as well as I do.
This is a public forum. You can tell them in public.
It is a public forum, and I believe in discussion and deliberation.
Is Big Pharma funding you?
Absolutely not. I've never taken.
How do you know?
Okay, I have to stop you there. I need to let Maxine have a final word here.
I will just say that this entire thing is frankly absurd. I have put my values on record. I have 4 years of voting records on progressive values. I have stood firm with people who have supported me and against people who have supported me. I took an oath of office, and I've taken an oath as a physician to keep people at the center and do no harm. My integrity is frankly being questioned here, which is absolutely offensive. I am here serving people and putting myself out there as an option for the voters, and our laws need to be changed. We need to change campaign finance, and that our laws are being followed, and I can't change those until I get to Congress. So I look forward to getting to Congress and working to make sure that big money is out of politics.
Well, Maxine, Sushila, Eddie, thank you for joining us. You can check out the candidates' websites, SushilaForCongress.com, MaxineForOregon.com, EddieMorales.com. Join us next week when we talk to the candidates in Oregon's 5th Congressional District, hoping to take on Republican incumbent Representative Lori Chavez-Dreamer. We'll see you next week for Straight Talk.